Quachit alpa, quachit buddhi. Bunje namasvadva sadhuvap. Quachit buddhi gunopetam. Gunahinam uta quachit. Quachit, sometimes, alpam, very little, quachit, sometimes, buddhi, great quantity, bunje, I eat, annam, food, svadu, palatable, svadu, stale, va, either, quachit, sometimes, buddhi, great, gunopetam, nice flavor, gunahinam, without flavor, uta, weather, kvacha, sometimes. Translation, sometimes I eat a very small quantity and sometimes a great quantity, sometimes the food is very palatable, but sometimes it is stale, sometimes prasad is offered with great respect, and sometimes food is given neglectfully. Sometimes I eat during the day, sometimes at night. Thus, I eat what is easily available. Next 39, to cover my body, I use whatever is available, whether it is linen, silk, cotton, bark, deerskin, according to my destiny, and I am fully satisfied and unagitated. Text 40, sometimes I lie on the surface of the earth, sometimes on leaves, grass, or stone, sometimes on a pile of ashes, or sometimes, by the will of the Lord, in a palace, on a first-class bed, with pillows. Purport, the learned Brahmana's description indicates different types of births, for one lies down according to one's body. Sometimes one takes birth as an animal, sometimes as a king. When he takes birth as an animal, he must lie on the ground, and when he takes birth as a king or a very rich man, he isn't allowed to lie in first-class rooms and huge palaces decorated with beds and other furniture. Such facilities are not available, however, at the sweet will of the living entity. Rather, they are available by the supreme will or by the arrangement of Maya. As stated in Bhagavad-gita, the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The living entity, according to his material desires, receives different types of beings, which are nothing but machines offered by material nature according to the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By the will of the Supreme, one must take different bodies with different means for lying down. Sometimes I lie on the surface of the earth, sometimes on leaves, grass, or stones, sometimes in a pile of ashes, or sometimes by the will of the others in a palace on a first-class bed with pillows. So all these verses are describing the nature of this Brahmana's existence, which is compared to the life of a python, who simply sits there and receives whatever comes. So therefore, in this particular verse, he describes the food. Sometimes they offer a little, sometimes a lot, sometimes it is tasty, sometimes it is not tasty. Sometimes it has good qualities, sometimes it has no good qualities. Sometimes people offer with affection and faith, sometimes they give no respect. Sometimes I eat in day, sometimes at night, whatever. Whatever they offer, I take. And similarly, whatever cloth is available or bark or whatever, I take that as my clothing. And whatever bed is available, that I take. So sometimes I'm on the earth, sometimes I'm on the bed, sometimes in a poor condition, sometimes in a very luxurious position. So, in other words, he does not strive for material objects. So the point made previously was that people endeavor for things and then they have to work very hard to get them. The work itself is tiring and painful. And then finally they get some result, which is also not very satisfying. So, and of course, all of this leads to actions, more desires, more actions, and then ultimately karma and another body. And we repeat the same type of activity. So therefore, all of this is considered to be useless. Yeah, so here, in particular, the last verse, we have the opportunity to lie on a bed or lie on the ground, etc. So we see that the brahmachari is supposed to live very simply, and the vanaprastha and sannyasi are supposed to live very simply. And we look in the scriptural descriptions of the vanaprastha, he lies down on the earth in the forest, and then he doesn't cook any food. He looks in the forest and gets some roots or some berries, and he eats those things. This is a vanaprastha's life. Very similar to this. So within the, though this person here is technically, doesn't look like he's part of the system at all, since he's not following any rules, even though he is a brahmana, he's just lying on the ground, all dirty. Within the system itself, there is provisions for such renunciation. So we have a simple life in the brahmachari ashram, and simple life in the vanaprastha and the sannyasa ashram. Of course, maybe not so extreme as this, but nevertheless, a similar tendency is there. And we will also find in other parts of the Bhagavatam some extreme renunciation. We see Rishabhadeva going to quite great extremes. We find people like Bharat, when he went off to the forest in the Himalayas, was living a very austere life. Very simple life. So in general, it was understood that those who were married in the grihasthas at a certain point should renounce and undergo some austerities. The prominent characteristic of the vanaprastha ashram is tapas, austerity. We may think that sannyas is the austere ashram, but actually tapas is the concentration in the vanaprastha ashram. And the concentration in the sannyas ashram is meditation on the Lord, thinking of the Lord. So in other words, the implicit meaning here is that we have to be a little detached before we can peacefully meditate on the Lord. So we have to give up all of our attachments, physical and mental. So therefore, the vanaprastha ashram is the renunciation ashram. Become detached from your family members, etc., and the luxuries of family life. And therefore, you separate yourself from your family members. And then you live without any luxuries. So this is, let's say, a preparation for the next thing. That is, full engagement in serving the Lord, worshiping the Lord. So within the Varnashram system itself, there are provisions for rejection of material life and concentration on the Supreme Lord. So in that sense, the Varnashram system, and that we call Karma Yoga, is a step towards or a favorable set of rules for practicing bhakti. In itself, of course, we do not call it bhakti. So that's where we make distinctions. We say karma yoga is karma yoga. It's not bhakti yoga. And bhakti yoga is bhakti yoga. And what is the reason? The reason is that and we see all these rules of karma yoga. So we have rules for vanaprasthas, rules for sannyasis, rules for grihasthas, etc. And most of them are not rules of hearing, chanting, remembering the Lord, or other things. The main rule of bhakti is remember the Lord, glorify the Lord, speak about the Lord, worship the Lord. These are the activities of bhakti. Fine, if these other people do it very good, then they're also doing bhakti. But the karma yoga system itself is prominent with these other rules. Rules for your engagement in work, rules for cleanliness, rules for purity, rules for punya, rules for sin, rules for so many things in the material world. So there's a concentration on other things as well. But it is permissible in the sense that it is favorable to the process of bhakti if the persons in that system understand what the goal is. If they don't understand the system, it becomes quite dangerous. Now, of course, people on the lower level, the sudras, can't really understand, but people on the higher levels should understand what the goal is. If they don't understand the goal either, then ultimately the whole system becomes useless. Because they'll forget about going to the Supreme Lord, and they'll simply do their duties and practice their rules and regulations and avoid sin and do punyas, etc. And that goes as far as they go. And they will never surrender to the Supreme Lord. For that reason, Narada Muni, in the first canto, when he talks to Veda Vyas after he's written all the Puranas and Mahabharata, the Vedanta Sutras, and divided the Vedas up, and given the Vedas and the Quranas to these different disciples to pass on in a parampara system. And then Narada Muni says, people of Kali Yuga are not very intelligent or short-lived, etc. So, they won't understand the indirect system. And what is the goal of that system? So instead of having an indirect system, we simply have to give a direct system. That's the simplest thing in Kali Yuga. And for that reason, bhakti becomes the process in Kali Yuga. And everything else is secondary to that. And even if it's forgotten or destroyed, it doesn't matter. The process of bhakti goes on. In other ages, there was an intact system. Varnas and ashramas. So then the system could also go on simultaneously. In Kali Yuga, the system is all disrupted, and therefore I simply emphasize the bhakti aspect. So we also see in the first canto that when Parikshit was touring his kingdom, and then he met the personification of Kali beating at the legs of Dharma, the bull, and only one leg was left. So that system of dharma has these four principles, like truthfulness, cleanliness, tapas, etc. And these are the constituents of dharma, which is the varnashram system. The bull is that system. They use dharma, the rules of that system. So in Kali Yuga, only one quarter of the rule is left. Not much is followed. So, very difficult to practice. So then what is the solution? So, that is what the sages ask. In Kali Yuga, Krishna has disappeared. Dharma has also disappeared along with Krishna. So we don't have four legs on the bull of Dharma anymore. So what are we supposed to do? And then the answer is, one, of course, that the Srimad Bhagavatam has risen like the sun in the darkness of Kali Yuga. What kind of answer is that? Well, the answer is that what does the Bhagavatam recommend? Worship Krishna. Chant Krishna's name. That is the final recommendation of Bhagavatam. So this is the recommendation in Kali Yuga, that though the Varnashram system is destroyed, these three quarters of it is destroyed, the process we follow mainly is the process of bhakti. Then we'll say, well, what about becoming detached? Because everybody in Kali Yuga is attached. The nature of Kali Yuga is tamagun. Tamagun means greatest attachment, the greatest ignorance, greatest covering of maya, completely absorbed in the body. And most of the people in Kali Yuga are tamasic. So how do we create this detachment, which is inherent in the varnashram system, brahmachari life, vanaprastha life, etc., and even in grass life, rules and regulations? Kali Yuga, tamasic. People will not want to follow anything. Too attached to body. And so they don't like rules and regulations. And of course, for that reason, the varnashram system gives less rules and regulations to the sudra. And gives most rules and regulations to the brahmana, because he's capable of following. So if everybody's in the lowest level, how are they going to advance? There's no system there. So they can progress upwards and become more advanced. Like going through the varnas and going through the ashramas, no more system is there. So the answer is that bhakti yoga itself provides everything. So whatever is accomplished by the varnashram system in terms of purification, destruction of ignorance, detachment from material things, etc., is available through bhakti. And even artha and kama, those two things are also supplied by bhakti. The process of bhakti gives all material results as well as all spiritual results. So therefore, artha, dhamma, karma, moksha are included within bhakti itself, though it gives something much higher than that. So therefore, one should never think that we must do something else other than bhakti. We must do bhakti. That is the whole goal of Bhagavatam. And repeatedly, the Bhagavatam will condemn everything else. Even jnana is condemned ultimately, even though it is recommended here to become detached from everything. Renounce everything in the material world. Even that is condemned, but to speak of karma yoga. So people will say, well, karma yoga, okay, we'll reject the sakama karma yoga, where we go for material results, etc. We shouldn't be attached. So nishkama karma yoga is better. Let's do that and offer the results to the Lord. Then it's like bhakti. But even that is condemned. Sakama karma yoga is also is condemned, and nishkama karma yoga also is condemned, because the results it gives are also limited. Even nishkama karma yoga, what does it do? It can take you up to Brahma Loka, and then if you're lucky, maybe you get to Brahma. That's it. So what is the use of that? And then jnana directly takes you to Brahman level. But we know there is Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So then we say, well, we'll become yogis and we'll meditate on Paramatma. True. But unfortunately, most Paramatma yogis merge into Paramatma, so that's similar to Brahman again. And Paramatma is simply functional aspect of Bhagavan. So ultimately we have to come to worship Bhagavan. So Bhagavatam clearly indicates that we have to worship that Supreme Lord Bhagavan, and particularly the form of Krishna. So all of this whole Python story here of the man who is becoming detached from everything and lying on the ground and understanding it's useless, etc. All of that is accomplished by the process of bhakti itself, but not through activities like this. So that's not the recommended process, simply to lie on the ground like a python. That's not the sadhana of bhakti. What is the sadhana of bhakti? Hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the Lord, sadhu sangha. These are the elements of bhakti. You can do them like this, or you can do them without doing this also. So this is the unique position of bhakti. It does not depend on all these other conditions. And at the same time, it does not deny these conditions. So we see a person like Rishabhdev, or this person here, very renowned, so they're doing this. But they also worship the Lord. So yes, you can do the things together, but for most people, very difficult to do. We cannot recommend this as the process in Kali Yuga, become like the python to everybody in the material world. Nobody's going to do it. If they try it, it's also impossible for them. But we can recommend worship the Supreme Lord, chant the Lord's name, etc. Process of bhakti is applicable to everybody. This process is not applicable to everybody. So, why then, the question comes, why then do we have all these different illustrations here? Here we have the whole Varnashram system is just being described. And then here we find, and then sannyas was described, and now we find this man here who's beyond sannyas also described. Why we have these descriptions at all? One, of course, is because it is part of the Vedic system. And of course, Prahlad and the other persons around were also within the system. That's one reason. And therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, we also have a description of Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Ashtanga Yoga, as well as Bhakti Yoga. So, just to make things complete, at the same time, it is made very clear that all these things are secondary. They're not to be done. They're all secondary. And very clearly, Krishna rejects the Karma Yoga system and Devata worship, etc. in chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita. He rejects everything at the Bhagavad Gita, and the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma Prachaja. So there's very clear indications that though they are described, they are not the goal. They're described. So in that sense, we have what's called the Aparas, the holy names. So one of them is Shruti Shastra Ninda. Don't criticize the Shrutis. So we shouldn't criticize the Shrutis, the scriptures, particularly the Vedic scriptures. So in the Vedic scriptures we have Karma Kanda, Karma Yoga, all this is in the Vedic scriptures. Jnana is there, Jnana Kanda is there. Don't criticize them. So therefore, included. At the same time, Krishna says, Nistra Gunya Bhavarjuna, rise above the gunas, these Vedas are, you know, Triguna. They're in the gunas, so rise above the three Vedas or whatever. So, what this means is that we're not disrespecting, but understanding that, yes, these things are there, but not the process to follow. in Kali Yuga. So, at the same time, though these processes are rejected as the process in Kali Yuga, that does not mean that they don't have any good qualities to them. So therefore, we can take the good elements of all these systems. They must have some good element, otherwise it wouldn't be in the Vedas. So we can take the good elements of these systems and practice them as long as they are favorable for bhakti. And that may change. Sometimes they may be favorable, sometimes they may be unfavorable. So sometimes we can practice certain ones and give them up as unfavorable. So that actually becomes something like the process of Vaini Bhakti as compared to Raganuga Bhakti. And Raganuga Bhakti reject more of these rules and regulations because they're unfavorable for expression of spontaneous love, if you've come to that stage. And then we see a person in bhava and prema, less dependence on rules, not because they hate rules, but because they're absorbed in the Lord, and therefore they don't remember any of these rules. And therefore, Rupa Goswami says, concerning the person in prema, how to recognize the person. He says, you cannot. No rules. No rules. Because you cannot predict what he's going to do. He may not act like an ordinary Christian person in the material world. He may contradict all the rules of everything. And he may look like a crazy man or whatever. So you cannot predict for those persons. So, as higher one goes in bhakti, then the less dependence on rules and even the less consciousness of rules are there. But in the beginning stages, then, yes, we need restrictions. We need rules. Because senses are uncontrolled, etc. So, the bhakti rules primarily emphasize engagement of the senses. Do this, do this, do this. Then we have 10 negative rules, from number 11 to 20. Now, the 64 angas of bhakti, don't do this, don't do that. So some of them are simply the opposites of the positive rules. You associate with the sadhus, don't associate with the non-sadhus. Asat sangha chag. Follow the scriptures of bhakti, don't read other books, etc. Follow a spiritual master and don't take many disciples. Don't become a spiritual master. So, this is negative aspects, yeah? But then among these elements, we do see things like don't come under the control of soka adi, lamentation, fear, illusion, all these things like this. Don't become too attached to material things. In Vaidhi Bhakti, we do have the positive rules, hearing, chanting, remembering. And then, to help us control the mind, we have rules and regulations. Though they're not directly mentioned in the Nectar Devotion, we see in the Bhagavatam, for instance, we do have the four pillars of Dharma, and then we have all the things, the sinful activities which destroy the four pillars. So we have meat eating and violence, gambling and cheating, lying, not telling the truth, etc. Illicit sexual activities, all these things. These are the things which destroy the legs of Dharma, the main principles of Dharma. And what are the main principles of Dharma for? Controlling the senses. Become detached from material things. These are destroyed by these activities. So therefore, favorable for us for controlling our senses to renounce these activities. Therefore, we have four regulated principles. So these help. These are rules and regulations taken from the Varnashram system to help us control the senses. because that is favorable for devotional development. So one of the six aspects of surrender, Sharanagati, is accept what is favorable, reject what is unfavorable. So we can take what is favorable from the Varnashram system, we reject what is unfavorable, worship of devatas, going to Svarga Loka, all these other things, we reject. Favorable elements help to control the senses, that we can accept. So that's what we follow as an assistant to our process of bhakti. If we only do those and we don't do the bhakti, then again, it's not too much value. Okay, it is good for becoming sattvic in the material world, definitely. No sin, less sinful activities, etc. So, you can rise to sattva, but of course, what is the use of being in sattva? Again, that is like karma yoga. And goal is simply svarga loka or brahma loka. So, not so useful. So bhakti is the element that has to be emphasized in any case, and all these other rules and regulations are supporting that performance of bhakti so it can go on smoothly and we can develop. And in the process of more attraction for Krishna, less dependence on these rules. As a person develops, klesha need takes place, desires decrease, karma decrease, etc. Subhada, good qualities develop. So, all the good qualities mentioned, there's a whole wonderful mention of qualities, I think, in the first canto of Bhagavatam of the Supreme Lord, in relation to this whole story of the bull, Dharma, etc. A whole series of qualities are mentioned. So, the Supreme Lord has all wonderful qualities. But these qualities are spiritual qualities, of course, better than the qualities within the Varnashram system, which are material. So, the Satya, and the Tapa, and the Socha, etc., are actually material qualities in the Varnashram system. The Lord also has qualities like that. Those are spiritual qualities, eternal qualities, not in sattva guna. They're sudha sattva. So the devotee also, as he progresses in bhakti and destroys bad things, kleshikni takes place, subhada takes place, and he develops spiritual qualities. Like the Lord. So, naturally, whatever is to be followed in the Varnashram system is also naturally followed by the devotee as he develops. And therefore, they're no longer rules for him. They're part of his nature because he has all wonderful qualities. So, therefore, less dependence as he goes up further and further in his progress in bhakti. Less material attraction, more attraction to Krishna, more spiritual qualities. So, therefore, in the beginning, yes, that we follow these rules. And as time goes on, they should be naturally part of the devotee's life and his nature. Yeah. It's explained one place in the Vishnu Chakrabarti sings one quarter of Dharma, not particularly one, not truthfulness only, but one quarter of everything or a mixture. So it's not just, obviously, not everybody's truthful in Kali Yuga, they're all liars. So one quarter of Dharma is left. It could be a little bit of everything, or even less than that. Yeah.
Breathing is emphasis being and becoming louder.
I said, we can only take some of the elements. We cannot apply the whole system, obviously. What are we going to apply? Obviously, we cannot apply birthright, since that would exclude everybody outside of India automatically. They couldn't be part of that system at all. And then if you start going not by birth, and you start making varnas, then in one sense that's offensive to the Vaishnava, because it's beyond varnas. Bhakti is beyond the varnas, so the Vaishnava is beyond varnas, and that's the whole point of getting the Brahman thread. It's not to say you're a Brahminical, it's to say you're beyond the Brahmana. That's what it's supposed to be. There's no goal of the Vaishnava in becoming a Brahman. That's not our goal. And our goal is being a Vaishnava. And we only have the thread to show that we're actually superior to the Brahmana, because Bhagavatam says that even the Chandala who meditates on the Lord or chants his Lord name once purely, he is qualified to do the Soma Yajna. That doesn't mean his aspiration is to become a Brahmana, no. This is simply that it includes everything else, that's all it means. So in that sense, we cannot say that therefore introducing the Brahman thread means that we're establishing Varnashram. That's not, to me, a logical thing. That was not the intention of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in introducing that, putting the Upanayanam into our Vaishnava practice. Yeah, so, and then Prabhupada also said that, okay, we should introduce Varnashram system. So, what aspect and for who? So some devotees say it meant for the society in general. Then what do we introduce? I think ultimately all you can do is introduce four regulative principles. That's the maximum we can do there. If we do that, we're successful. Try to do anything else is going to be a big failure. Try to make a government, a monarchical government, going to be a failure. You get thrown in jail. It's a revolutionary. Can't do that. To establish a caste system, nobody's going to go for that. You have to snap at everything that's already accomplished. So it's very, very difficult. All you can do is take some of the principles. So the regulative principles, cleanliness, control your senses, that much you can take as far as general population. As far as devotees, similar. That's about all we can do. And engage people according to their propensities. That's about it. But beyond that, I don't think we can do it much. Yeah. Yeah, so let them do. You choose, go to college, you can choose business administration or whatever you want, agricultural field or whatever, I don't know. You can choose, actually. But nobody chooses the arts. Nobody chooses the brahminical occupations. Yeah? You can choose to go to a gurukul and learn the Vedas, but nobody does that. So choice is there for everybody in the material world. That's one thing. When they're mixed up, due to mixture of castes and mixture of education system, lack of education, lack of samskaras, etc. So yes, it is definitely mixed. That's one thing. And how to determine again, and then individual needs, financial needs, etc. So many considerations are there. So ultimately, it has to be an individual decision. That's all. What they want to do. Which is what they're doing now anyway. Everybody's just deciding what they want to do, whether it's engineering or this or that, according to their need. So we can't do much about that and force them to do something else. Yeah. Yeah. Chant Hare Krishna, we go beyond the gurus. That's all we can do. That's all I say. And if some guna is prominent, let them engage. If they're in the mode of Rajagun, fine. They're going to do Rajagun activities. It's not so favorable for bhakti, because if you're in Rajagun, you cannot concentrate your mind on the Lord. So you know, we can engage people like that, but if they're prominent in Rajaguna, probably be problematic for their bhakti also, as devotees, I'm saying. Material world's fine, they can do, but as for devotees, we can't really cater to people's gunas in that sense. And technically, by doing bhakti, we're beyond the gunas. Weeds. Yeah. Yeah. The weeds in bhakti grow due to the process of bhakti, which is practiced inattentively. Yeah. So it's not that the bhakti produces it, but the impure bhakti produces it. What happens is, due to the process of bhakti, all the results of jnana and karma can also come. So, then if you become attached to those results, then it becomes a weed. So, due to bhakti, you can get material things. You become attached to, then you can develop the margins. That's the weed. Huh? Yeah, so we're said to be attentive. And we have to be detached from the things by being attached to Krishna, but if we're not at nishtha, at least, then more danger that we're going to be attached to the material things. If we're at a sakti or ruchi or a sakti, then we're more attached to Krishna, less attached to the material things. It is safer, obviously. Not out of danger, but safer. Principles, get up early in the morning, come from Mangalarti. These are rules. Yep, we follow. Bhakti rules. Then we have bhakti rules, then we have varnashramic rules, rules of cleanliness, all these rules are there. Yeah? Rules for maintaining the body, rules for social interaction, speaking to people, respect, etc. So there are rules on different levels, there are different things. So these are favorable for us. As a person advances, he's less concerned with his body. He's less concerned with other people, society. Therefore, he's more concerned with Krishna. So he neglects the rules for the body, rules for social interaction. So he may not speak to people, may not respect people. He's just absorbed in Krishna all the time, like this. Huh? Indifferent to his food, as the sadhu is here. And whatever comes, comes. It's tasty, untasty, whatever. Takes whatever comes, like that. So may act like that, completely indifferent to those rules and regulations. Not to disrespect rules, but because he's absorbed in Krishna. They become an obstacle to his meditation on Krishna. Very good. Very good. The bills will go down. No more food. You don't have to buy food for them. No more eating. A little bit more and more simple. Ah. Yeah. Definitely the Uttamadhikaris don't preach. So that's why there's much fewer usually in the material world. less Uttamadhikaris and more of the other group. Because the Madhyamadhikaris are the preachers. So to get to that level, you have to go through the Madhyam stage. So most of the people are the Madhyam stage, not the Uttama stage. Madhyams become Uttamas eventually, if one practices Bhakti Yoga properly. Can, like Narada Muni and others. There's also, yeah, they don't follow their rules and regulations. They consider fallen from that particular caste also. Yeah.
surrounded by five kinds of pranas.
Yeah. No, the soul doesn't mix with these things, just as the lotus doesn't mix with the mud or whatever like that. So then even Paramatma is in the body also, but doesn't mix with it. So the soul doesn't mix with anything like this. Of course, the soul in the material world is contaminated in the sense that his consciousness is thinking, I am the body, and is attracted to material things. In that sense, he's contaminated, or he's covered by ignorance. Yes, the soul can be covered by ignorance. It stops the mental functions, so it stops all your desires and your thoughts and everything like that, and then Atma can reveal itself. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So don't do that. Just worship the Lord. If it's favorable for bhakti, if it's favorable for bhakti, but if it becomes too extreme, then it may become unfavorable to you listeners in bhakti and immersion in Brahman instead. Kshatriya duty. The other thing is, just follow the will of the Supreme Lord. And if Krishna says, don't fight for him, okay, he won't fight. If he says, fight, he fights. Yeah? So simply follow the will of the Lord. His will at that stage was, annihilate the sinful, because that was the goal. Annihilate the burden of the earth, the sinful of people. Duryodhana was the personification of Kali before Kali happened. So you destroy Duryodhana and his brothers, fine. So that was the mission of the Lord, secondary mission of the Lord. Not the primary mission, secondary mission. So he helped. Yeah, all these arguments in the second chapter, you should fight because you're a kshatriya. It's all secondary arguments. Yeah? And Krishna also gives some nice arguments based on karma mimamsa when he argues with his father to stop the sacrifice to Indra. It's not even bhakti arguments, it's karmakanda arguments, actually. Everything comes by the will of karma, so don't worship the devatas. You don't have to worship them. It comes by the law itself of karma, so you don't need to worship anybody. So that's the karma mimamsa type of thing. So not all the arguments are on the highest level that are given.